You're listening to WMFO in Medford. It's 10 a.m.
My mom has decided to learn to paint, and she's good.
My dad's now into creative cuisine, and I've already put on 6 pounds.
Learning new things comes with age.
My mom, she started forgetting my name and what we're talking about.
Forgetting well-known things doesn't. Memory loss may be a sign of Alzheimer's disease. Early detection gives you and your loved one time to plan for the future. Learn the warning signs of Alzheimer's at 10signs.org. Brought to you by the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 10:04 in the morning. I'm Mike. Let me tell you what I played in that last set. Started with Bad Marriage, New Noise, Saxon cover, Denim and Leather. Then we had The Sins, our pals from New Jersey, from their album in 2016 called Little Devil. That was Mean Girls. Glowbox, Boston Zone, Jokes on You, a single from 2023. Crow Follow from Red Velvet Radio came out in 2022. That was 54. And just heard Sharp Class from their latest record called Welcome to the Matinee Show at the End of the World. That was Catch My Breath. Now at 10:05, it's time for a brand new edition of Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico with Steve Ricardo right here at WMFO in Medford.
Down at Lakeside after 20. Yeah. Welcome to a special live episode of Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. We're coming to you live on the airwaves of WMFO Medford. Okay, I just got really shocking news, just literally when we were getting ready to go on the air, and I have to mention it, but a good friend of mine, Inger Laurie, singer of the Nymphs, someone I knew very well, passed away. I just saw it on Facebook. I guess I don't go on Facebook enough to have noticed. It could have been, I don't even know when this happened. It was within a day or two ago, but I just want to mention that because Inger was, we were really close in the early 90s, and it just caught me off guard. But I'm going to try and maintain my composure here. Thank you to Mike Newman over here at WMFO, who's also a contributor to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast for engineering. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Steve. How you doing? And you're welcome, by the way.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you for starting our show 7 minutes late. No, I'm just kidding, Mike.
No, you're not.
It's okay. Today, my friend and superb drummer, Chris Negrette, who some of you may know by the name of Christian Negrette, is joining me here in the studio. Chris was the drummer of a band that has been referred to as noise rock, post-punk, or just plain punk, however you want to refer to them. I'm talking about the great Boston band Spore, and we're certainly going to get into them in a minute, because I never got to see Spore live, and I really dig the band. Chris also played on at least one Eels record. I think there only was one, but was in the band for a long time, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And then he was the original drummer of the punkified blues band Caged Heat, which I had a close relationship with in one way or another, more than one actually. It was complicated, what can I say? So we'll have to talk about that. So here he is, my friend Chris Negrette. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hello, good morning, everybody.
I've been wanting to have you on the show for a while, so I'm honored to have you here today.
I'm pleased to be here. I'm a little out of my comfort zone, but we'll make it work.
Oh, we will, man. We have a lot to talk about. Before we get into talking about you, I want to talk about a new release. Or should I say a reissue? It's the double album for Propeller Records, which includes all the restored tracks from the original Propeller cassette, which came out in the early 80s. Talia Zedek, one of my favorites, everyone knows, who was on Propeller while she was in the Dangerous Birds, and Bob Weston, who also played bass in Shellac and Volcano Suns, and more recently was the live engineer and tape manipulator for Mission of Burma. They worked on getting these tracks restored, and what a lineup up from that original art scene here in Boston. The Neats, Dangerous Birds, V, CCPTV, I always not have enough C's there, Wild Stairs, Lori Green, Art Yard. It's a great record and I highly recommend it. Simply entitled Propeller Product 4.1. You probably know some of these people, Chris, and I was a big Dangerous Birds fan, but it seems like Spore, even though you guys came out a little later than that, was in the same circles. Even the Eels, you know?
We got to play with Kum a couple of times, and they're my close friends, and I admire them more than they know. And it's nice to be friends with your heroes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's incredible.
You probably feel the same way about Talia Zedek as I do.
I do.
I mean, I was a Dangerous Birds groupie.
Yeah.
So I go way back with her. And, you know, Uzi, Live Skull.
Yeah.
I mean, Kum.
Yeah.
I mean, her solo work is fantastic. Yeah.
Chris Brokaw, too, is just amazing. And Arthur, the drummer, is like my inspiration as far as his chops go. I've been studying his work for a long time.
I'm going to ask you about some of your influences. You know, Chris, I saw you about a month ago, and it was right before I left for California. I know you want to ask me about California, because you love California like I do.
I was born in San Diego.
There you go.
Yeah.
I didn't make it down to SD. I was mostly in the South Bay of LA, but I went to the Valley and Studio City.
That's so nice.
Hollywood, of course, you know.
Yeah.
Drove down Sunset. My favorite thing to do out in LA is go to Ventura, down Ventura Boulevard all the way to Topanga Canyon and take that like 20-minute swervy ride, and then all of a sudden, there's that big blue, beautiful Pacific Ocean looking you
right
there.
Yeah, it's awesome. Just as you go over the hill, you see the water. There's nothing like it.
Tell me what it was like growing up in SD. How long were you there for?
So I was born in San Diego, and then I lived in Solana Beach, Del Mar area until I was about 12. And my sister, Dorio, was in punk rock bands, and she influenced me like in the mid to late 70s. She was in a band called the Dinettes, and then I named her second band The Cockpits, not realizing as a young kid what the actual meaning of that meant. But
wow, I didn't know that you had a sister that was a musician. Yeah. What did she play?
So she was the singer and the band leader, and they got to play with the B-52s, the Runaways, like
nice,
yeah, like crazy, you know, like the Bags, Alice Bag, and I was in love with the bass player who was like Miss San Diego, and she was a vicious lesbian that actually stabbed somebody after a show. So,
okay,
she's my perfect type.
Oh, it's a little too early to start going down that road, but we might go a little down that road.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sure, you are. Yeah. So were you listening to all those kind of bands when you were
a
teenager?
Yeah, and my sister was in communications class at University of San Diego, and so she would actually put shows together and have me as a little kid like introduce like the Dead Boys song or this or that. So, you know, I got to hear like all the good stuff.
How old were you? I was like
10 and 12.
That's a great start, man.
Yeah.
That's a great start. Yeah. So what made you, was the drums the first thing that you started playing?
Yeah, or? And you know, like everybody would say, oh, everybody starts off with the drums and then they go to play guitar or whatever, but no. I'm a drummer.
Now, who are some of your early influences? You mentioned Arthur from Come before, but this is way before that. So I imagine you had different influences.
Well, of course, I love Kiss and
Pete Chris.
Yeah, and so my parents were both musicians. My dad actually played in the San Diego Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
Yeah. So we had like a grand piano and a harpsichord in our living room growing up. So it was
a musical family.
It was a musical family.
See, you know, you think you know someone because we met back in the late 90s when I moved to Boston back from L.A. and we ended up doing some work together. But I didn't know anything about, except that you were in Spore and Eels. You know,
yeah.
But were you in any bands out in California?
Or? I wasn't. No, I was too young or whatever. But so then from there, my family got in a little bit of trouble and had to leave town. And
that's interesting.
I don't really want to get into it, but the police were involved, and we ended up moving to Amherst, where I went to elementary school, and I ended up living with my mother's college roommate, who had adorable kids that were older than me, and they all were into college radio and everything. And so I got a second blast of influence, you know, listening to music all day.
Learning so much here. So you went from SD to Western Mass.
Yeah.
And were there bands in Western Mass?
There were all kinds of great bands, and I got to play with bands in high school and in jazz workshop. I was playing with Jay Maskus on drums.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. Uma Thurman was at the school for about a year until she got famous.
Which school was this?
Amherst Regional.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you know Jay Maskus very well?
I kind of knew him as well as you could.
You ended up on gigs with him years later.
And, you know, Pat Murphy was my next-door neighbor. So we used to smoke pot and listen to, you know, radio and stuff together.
Those are some pretty cool people to know when you're a kid.
And, you know, Charlie Nakajima, who was in Deep Wound, the singer, he was a good friend. And, yeah, I got lucky.
Absolutely. So how did you make your way from, like, Western Mass out here? And when did that happen? Was it school related?
Well, okay, so... I divorced my mother at 15. I became an emancipated minor and moved out of my house and had my own place and was working all the time and playing music. And that's what saved me. Was
this still while you were in Western Mass?
In Western Mass. Yeah. So I was playing in a hardcore band called High Speed Vomit that everybody hated, but we were really good. And my friend Tim Halley, who went to Hampshire College.
One of the best schools in the country.
Yeah, and he got us gigs there constantly. I got to play with the Bad Brains and all kinds of...
You opened for Bad Brains as a teenager.
At 16 years old.
Wow.
And it was a highlight of my life, and I'm so glad I did it.
What year was that?
This must have been 86,
I later.
Think.
Okay, you're younger. Yeah. That's right. Younger than me.
Could have
anyways.
Been 85. I don't even know. But yeah, a long time ago.
So how long did High Speed Vomit last?
So we had that band probably for like about 5 or 6 years. And it was this guy, Sean Keefe, who was like my best friend. And we went through a million singers and bass players. And we kept it alive for a while. And then we thought we were all that. We moved to Boston, and then we got beat up by all the real hardcore kids. The end.
So that was like around what year did you get here?
87, 88.
Where'd you live when you moved to Boston?
So I lived at Stump World in Alston, which was like a big white house on Alston Street.
It's really funny how all the houses in Austin are famous for their color. Like there's the greenhouse where Richard Marr and LEV and all those people live. Yeah. Mark Schleicher. Yeah. You were in the White House.
I was in the White House.
Who was in the White House?
So Carlo Tacchi was there. He was in Skin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we had a bunch of luminaries over there. They're artists. And we had some pretty great parties, you know.
Before I ask you what bands you got in Boston, were you going to shows? Were you going out to clubs? Do you remember what you were doing?
The first show I got invited to was Slapshot and Circle Jerks at the Rat.
Good one.
And I remember Keith Morris. Everyone, the drummer was late for some reason, and Keith Morris jumped up and smashed his head open on the light or the pipe or something like that, and it was a great show.
Blood. Whenever there's blood, it's always a good show when there's blood.
Yeah. Tons of violence. People were getting dragged up the back stairs.
So was the Rat the first place you went to?
It was.
Wow. Slapshot in the Circle. Yeah. That's not a bad start.
Yeah, I was pretty intimidated by Choke.
Did you get to know a lot of the Boston people right away in the scene?
I actually did. You know, I lucked out. I got off the bus and Hank Pierce...
Reverend Hank.
Yeah, was in the pit, and I'm like, Hank, I need a job. This is the very first day I landed in like 1988. He got me a job that day at Stuffett's.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. Okay, Hank's a really good friend
of
mine, so that's a good thing to hear. He's been on the show like 3 or 4 times. Wow, I didn't know you had a connection to Hank. Everyone's got a connection to Hank, right?
Yeah.
So were there bands like right away?
Then I got asked to play with the Eels, and I don't remember exactly what happened. I think Robbie, the original drummer, went on to King Moonraiser with Duke. I can't remember his last name for some stupid
Duke
reason.
Duke Roth? From
Yes.
Duke Roth, who ended up in Bullet La Volta.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then Billy...
There's only two Dukes that I know, Duke Ross and Duke Levine.
That's right.
Duke Roth and Duke Levine.
Yeah.
They're the two great musicians,
guitar players. Is such a nice guy. I can't even
Everyone says that about
what
him.
What a nice guy.
He's the last, at the end of Bullet, he was their guitar player.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then Billy O'Malley left that band, and he went on to Seika, right?
And Seika.
And other, you know, he played with Blue Man Group, and there was, you know.
I think he's in Vegas now.
He's in Vegas now, yeah. Playing with Blue Man Group.
So you knew Billy early on?
I did, and I you know, I got to play a couple shows with him, and you know, he's amazing. I didn't say that.
You saved it, man.
I saved it.
See, the FCC thing is not something we're used to in the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico world, and we've already had past guests that have slipped up a little bit.
But the host
has not slipped up yet, otherwise he'd be booted out the building, right, Mike?
Every day is another chance for me to mess up. Could be today.
Well, I'm not trying to get you in any trouble, man. Neither is Chris.
I know.
So, Eels... Okay, now I know you said to me before that you were with Eels for a long time, but there was only really one Eels 7-inch EP, right?
That is correct.
And that was called, and I had it written down here somewhere, and I can't find it now. Of course, I was a little out of order. It was just a 2000, it came out in 2000, it was just a self-titled EP.
Self-titled EP.
Yeah. So how did that come together, and was that the first band for you?
Besides
sitting in with Billy O'Malley and other people?
It was, but it was really mostly Jimmy and Jim Nizio and Craig Spalter. And they had the loft at Causeway with a skateboard ramp.
It was a famous loft. I never got to go there.
It was above Hi-Fi Pizza. Or was it Hi-Fi? I don't know what that pizza place is right there. But anyway... So we used to have loft parties, and then Billy Rowayne became our, you know, best pal in the world, and he would get us shows everywhere, and we were so lucky. I can't even tell you, as a young kid, you know, opening for Melvins and Helmet and...
For a band that only put out one record,
yeah.
The playing history of Eels is incredible.
I know.
And of course, you lost the name at some point. You got sued, and the other Eels took the name from you.
Yeah, and the guy stole the logo that I actually came up with.
Did you get a lawyer and sue them?
No, I wanted to, but you know. I don't have the means for that.
Yeah. But still, Eels is a band that if you were in the Boston, around Boston, that area, everyone knew about Eels.
Yeah. You know, we got to play the Channel with Gwar and the Exploited.
Played with everybody.
We played with Gwar at Green Street Station. And, you know, we used to practice in Doug Mellon's upstairs workout karate room. He let us rehearse there. And then, you know, like he would, you know, he'd always want favors from us. So one time we had to play a benefit show. We didn't know anything about it. And then we show up and it's for the Outlaws. For
what?
Pappy Palermo had passed away. And the gang hated us. We had to learn, like, Born to be Wild in, like, 5 seconds, and we just kept playing it over and over again. I thought I was going to die.
Wow. We got to talk about Spore. It's probably going to take a little time to go through this thing. How soon after you were in Eels did you get, like, was it, you know, Mona Elliott?
Right.
Great Mona Elliott. Ayal, and who's the fourth member?
Mark... Orleans. So, unfortunately, Mark Orleans passed away a few years ago.
And Sorry to hear that.
He was like the main talent. He was a short guy that liked to play as loud as he could.
Spore was a... Before you get into it a little more, I got to tell you, I listened to the 10-inch picture disc last night of Fear God and I Want You, She's So Heavy, the Beatles cover. This is one of the most pure, evil rock and roll EPs ever. I'd like to use more expletives to enhance my point, but we're, you know, like I mentioned, the FCC's out there. Plus, I like coming over here to Tufts University and doing a radio show. That record, when you listen to Fear God, it's pure evil.
It's so noisy. Yeah.
And then you guys do an incredible Beatles cover.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the second thing you did. Okay, the band must have formed before 1992 because the number one Splinter 7-inch came out in 92. So talk about how you met those people and how the band formed.
So I put out a flyer. This is back when you could do this kind of thing. And I got a call from Ale, who was at MIT at the time. And he was like, come on down. So I played it at, they had a basement rehearsal space in Alston, and it clicked, and it was great. And it happened really quick. Everything, like, we started getting gigs immediately, and I couldn't believe it. And the scene at the time were all, like, our friends. So it was just the best time to be playing in Boston, and you know, we wanted more than that, so we tried to become, you know, like a national act, and we did get to tour a few times and everything, but you know, it was mostly Boston action.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I love, you know, I've only met her briefly, Mona Elliott, but I'm a huge fan because I became a huge fan of Victory at Sea, right, the band that she was in after Spore. But Spore was a legendary band, you know, Tang Records, right, we could talk about that. Did Mona have anything going on before Spore, or was this her first thing that she did?
She had at least two or three bands before, and she was actually playing with my ex Megan for a while. What the Moon
Megan
Saw.
McLaughlin? She was playing with Megan?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah. What was that called?
What the Moon Saw, or I can't remember exactly, but yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So they.
Did you see them?
I didn't get to see them.
So it was all because of the flyer.
It was because of the flyer.
So what was it like with those guys? Because, you know, obviously they've gone on AL 27.
Right.
Another huge touring band.
Yeah.
Victory at Sea. But this is like, you guys did a lot of touring. What was it like at first? Because you were still fairly young at that point.
Yeah. I think I was like 25 or 26.
Oh, so you were a little older at that point.
Yeah. So, you know.
That's young, though.
It was young. I was terrified at first, but I was like, you know, I have to do this. And so we actually only did like two-month tours. And it was great. We were sleeping on people's floors and meeting all kinds of nice people and having great shows, getting drunk every night.
I'm not surprised. How did Curtis Tang come into the picture?
Curtis, I can't remember. We must have played with Upside Down Cross or something like that, and he was there, and he was very receptive right away. He was like, when I watched Night of the Hunter, this is what I think about with Spore. And I was always like, huh? Okay.
Well, the music's kind of evil. If you're not familiar with the band, people listening, you should check them out. You ended up doing the Fear God EP in 93. Then you had a Power Behind split with Slughog, which is funny because Andrew Schneider's comes into the life of us later on, but
absolutely,
he was in your life early.
Yeah,
the Spore self-titled album 93. Then you had a split EP with Queer, and this one really got my attention. In 94, Active in the Yard split with Mission of Burma.
Yeah,
so you guys were in some pretty good. And then Giant was the big farewell last record.
Right, right.
So what do you that's a lot, and that's six releases in 2 years.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. I think we all drove each other crazy because we, you know, all have our own neurosis in one way or another. And, you know, it works when the music's working, but when you're around each other and not playing music, it can be a little difficult, I think. So that might have played part.
I saw a review where you guys played L.A. and you got there late and they decided to like rip you apart in some review. I mean,
the L.A. Times.
Yeah. Not just some review, but the L.A. Times.
Yeah.
But you were also in Rolling Stone magazine.
That's right.
They did a pick.
Yeah.
And what else? Because you're in a lot of magazines.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we got 30 seconds in Natural Born Killers in the
best scene of
the movie. And we thought we were going to be huge. You know, we're on tour in L.A. We're going to play the Viper Room, and we come around the corner, and there's a billboard of us, like, on Sunset at the whatever. What's the big record store that used to
Tower,
be?
Tower Records.
At Tower. And I'm like, oh, my God, we're famous. No, we're not. But... We had a great time, you know. We got to play the Viper Room twice. We got to play in San Francisco a bunch of times.
Did you guys have a publicist, or did Tang do all that for you?
So Mary Ellen was our publicist, and she did an excellent job.
She was at Tang?
Yeah.
Cornelia was probably there, too.
And Cornelia and Chris, damn it, I can't remember.
Chris Conway, who
Chris
we
Conway.
Love. We love Chris.
He's the nicest guy on the planet.
Gypsy Moths.
That's
I almost
right.
forgot the name of Chris's band, and that would have been embarrassing.
Yeah.
He's now in the Gypsy Moths.
Yeah. What a handsome, nice guy. He is nice.
He is handsome. And, you know, I didn't realize how important he was to Tang Records till Curtis told me, and
right.
I quote, he was the best employee that I ever had.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of good employees.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Including my friend Tom Wilson.
And I have to say... you know, a lot of people badmouth Curtis because it's very convenient for them to do that. Curtis did so much for us, and he was a true friend of mine, and I have nothing bad to say about him.
Oh, it's so good to hear that because, you know, he's one of the people that supports my podcast.
There you go.
And, you know, Curtis and I have been friends since, we didn't meet, but 1980. Three, we both worked at the same radio station,
okay.
WICN in Worcester.
Interesting.
So Curtis he's a legend, if you ask me, because of all the, you know, Lemonheads, Bolt, LaVolt,
right.
Spore.
Yeah.
You know, he's like Mighty Mighty Boss Tones,
right.
Slapshot.
Yeah.
He's done, so Tang did you good.
He did us nice, and he, you know, he let us stay at his beach house that, I can't remember.
In San Diego?
In San Diego. It's where they filmed like a soap opera with... Shit. I can't remember.
Shoot.
I can't remember the...
Mike's shaking his head. Mike, you know, this is bound to happen sometimes.
Who's
you know?
The guy from...
Sometimes.
Who's the guy from General Hospital that went on to Jesse's Girl and...
Rick Springfield?
So Rick Springfield did an offshoot after General Hospital... In this house.
Get out of here.
That was on
Bell, but I can't remember. I've been to that beach house, but I can't remember where. It's right on the Strand.
It's
San Diego.
Right on the Strip. And it was so awesome staying there. And I can't tell you how kind Curtis was.
A lot of people have stayed in that house.
Yeah.
Curtis has been, you know.
They had a hot tub. I didn't go in it.
Oh, man. So it ended. And you said you didn't really know what, well, Neurosis, I think is what you said.
Yeah.
Was it right after Giant that Spore ended?
I think so, because we were having like writer's block, and I think
sure. You got writing credits, so you guys all co-wrote a lot of the songs together.
I was really lucky to insert that into all the writing, because I mean I'm writing the drum parts, you know what I
right.
mean? They're not telling me what to play. I'm playing what I want to play.
But you know, not every band is willing to split the publishing.
No.
But that band was.
It was.
And now who did the lyrics? Mona?
So we all did, actually.
So you actually wrote lyrics too.
I didn't write any. I sang. We all sang, which was unusual for a four piece or whatever, you know. So it there was a lot of really cool stuff about it, you know. It was different.
It's a I know the history of Tang. Chris just handed me the insert, the history of Tang. There's a lot of Spore records on here. Wow, that's a lot of records when you look at it like that. Huh? Well, we know that. We know everything Tang has done.
Yeah.
It's sad, you know, because you did so much in a short period of time and there was such a buzz on the band. What happened to you when that ended? Were you like, okay, I know KHT came along.
Right.
That was like a few years later.
Yeah.
Was there anything in between Spore and KHT?
Yeah, so Ale and I kept the rehearsal space for a while and we tried to, you know, get like a bass drum thing with other people. We actually played with Chris and Talia one time to see if we could get something going with them. And
wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and then I got dumped. So
you got dumped?
Yeah. So I think what happened was Ale started playing with that guy Taz. Is that his name? He was in La Gratona.
Okay,
and
I don't know him, but
everybody loves him.
Okay.
He's fine.
But he didn't love you?
Well, they decided that he was the drummer that they wanted after yeah. So,
wow, that's
yeah. So I got jaded.
Okay, you're a really good drummer, man. So
I got jaded.
Wow. So what did you do after that? Drugs? I mean, what happened
I drank,
after that?
I drank a lot.
Drank?
Yeah. I tried cocaine once for about 10 years after that.
You tried cocaine for 10 years?
Yeah.
Or yeah, I can resemble that myself.
Yeah,
I think we all can in the music business.
But, yeah, I was a little sad.
Hey, don't look at me like that, Mike. The FCC didn't tell us we couldn't talk about drugs.
I don't do it anymore.
I was looking right through you, Steve. I wasn't looking at you.
You're looking at my sinuses to make sure they lasted through that experience. But don't forget, I was in L.A. in the 80s and 90s.
A&R.
Yeah, I don't know how, Chris, it happened. I think, I know, Any Design, which was like a T-shirt merch company over in the Fenway.
That's right.
I remember. I went down there because I just had moved to L.A. This is like 96 or 7.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just had moved back to Boston.
Right.
I was still working at A&M, but I got robbed in New York, so they let me move to the Polygram office in Boston, and I started managing a band called 3 1/2 Girls.
Right.
And Chris Doherty from Gangrene said, check out Any Design and get your T-shirts there.
Right.
And I went in, and there you were.
Okay.
Any Design.
Oliver worked there,
Oliver,
too. Yeah. Gage and Levia.
Levia, who, you know, we got to say something about Levia, because she's an awesome human being.
I love her.
And I hope she listens to us say this about her.
I hope so, too.
Because I loved her. Because they gave me great deals.
Uh-huh.
And on shirt. I did a lot of 3 1/2 Girls merch there. And I actually met you before I met Chili Kurtz from KHT.
Huh. Okay.
Because she didn't start working there until afterwards.
That's right.
So Chili was in Asherah. I started working with Asherah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Asherah, she's the singer and guitar player. And they ended, and she wanted to start a new band. And I don't think I had anything to do with, even though Chili and I were, you know, we were together. We were boyfriend and girlfriend at that time.
Right.
She wanted to start a band. She knew I had the music background. She wanted me to manage her, and I helped her. I wasn't the one, though, I don't believe, that recruited you in KHT.
I don't remember.
Was Kate Friend, who was the bass player, was she down there too?
I don't remember how it all came together. I think Jill must have asked me, or I had a drum room at the Frank Butts building.
Oh, you mean New Alliance building?
Yeah.
You mean the Alvin Lund Frank
the Alvin.
Butts, the Frank Butkus' building took over. Alvin,
right.
If you're out there listening, we know that we know it was your building, Alvin.
Right. Right.
Yeah, 1312 Boylston Street, which gets mentioned on my show about every other episode. How can it not? It's such an historic place.
It was historic.
As far as Boston goes.
Right.
And, you know, Schneider was there, too.
Yeah, Tim
Katz, Andrew Schneider.
Everybody,
Schleicher.
Velveteen.
Yeah, Roadsaw's room was the famous party room. You
right.
know? Well, 3 1/2 Girls had a rehearsal space there as well.
Yep.
So you were in that building, and that's probably where you ran into
Jill.
That's
probably where I ran into her.
And Kate was with Goliath, I think? think, before.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah, she played in the band Goliath. They did a reunion show recently.
Really?
Yeah. And you three got together, and it was the original first lineup of, that's saying a lot, because Caged Heat had a lot of different versions of the band.
Yeah.
Always Jill, but different people. But that original lineup with you and Kate was phenomenal.
It was fun.
You guys got out of the box really hard, and you ended up playing. Everyone wanted you guys to play with.
It was a lot of fun, and playing over on Kilmonark Street at what was the bar? The church.
The Lynwood.
Lynwood. Derp.
I ended up booking that place for a few years. That could have had something to do with KHC playing there.
I'm
not trying to take the credit, but. Before I say unfortunately that lineup didn't last long, because it didn't really last that long, maybe 6 months, or was it longer than that?
No, it was at least a year and a half, I think.
A year and a half. Excuse me. Well, there's no official releases. There's only four songs that were recorded with that lineup with Andrew Schneider at New Alliance. One of them, which we're going to play the song later in the show, Raised in Hell, which was like, I call this the Raised in Hell line, because you with your background vocals, hell, remember that? I know you remember that.
I hope so.
Well, we recorded, you know, that song and three other songs. That song ended up on the Twisted Rico 2000 compilation with Dave Minahan playing lead guitar.
Nice.
So it was you, Kate, Chili, and Dave Minahan, recorded by Andrew Schneider, and then Dave Minahan added the guitar parts in Woolly Mammoth Studio.
Right.
It was incredible.
Right.
I mean, that song, when you folks hear it at the end and of the show, which you will hear it live, and you'll hear it again on the podcast that's coming out, you know, when it comes out, you'll see what I mean. It was kind of a rough ending. I do remember that. But you know what? Everyone still kind of, well, maybe everyone wasn't friends at the end, but they, I mean, I thought Kate was upset at me and Jill, but I ran into her in Portland, Maine years later, and she's like, you did the right thing. I don't blame you. You know, we quit, you know?
Yeah.
She quit and then you quit. And there we were standing there, Jill and I, like, there's no band.
That was an unfortunate breakup. I remember because it lasted 3 hours with you telling us that we can't break up. And then I was like, we broke up. I'm leaving.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't as mean as someone else in the room was.
That's true.
If she hears this, Jill, Chili Kurt, she'll agree. She did some, it was a real, I think there may have been alcohol involved too.
I think so too.
And it turned into a real,
yeah, and it's nice to be able to talk about it and everyone be nice about it in the end, because
we
would have exploded or something. I don't know.
And you've been through other breakups too, you know, so you know what it's like. And you know what? I've been around so many bands breaking up over the years that I look back at that and it's calm compared to some of the things I've seen.
Absolutely.
You know, calm.
Yeah. I do feel bad, believe it or not. I have a lot of empathy for, you know, like, and I feel bad about Spore breaking up for Curtis's sake. You know, I don't know why. And I feel bad about this for your sake, because you put in so much work and effort into it too. You know what I mean?
Caged Heat rebounded though, and they ended up, you know, Jill put a new band together. Two albums came out after that.
Yeah.
So, but those, when you listen to those early tracks that were played relentlessly by, you know, Julie Chadwick and Mark Hamilton and all the local Carmelita.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if KHT did accomplish anything with that first lineup, it was creating the punkified blues buzz around town.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys did.
Yeah.
That first lineup. And one of the best lineups. There was a lot of good lineups with that band, but that first lineup was really, really good.
I was pretty blown away by, like, you know, some of my friends coming to see us, and I was like, wait, you're coming to see us?
Yeah, but you know what the best part about the band was? The promo photos.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, occasionally I like to post one of those prison photos.
Crazy.
I mean, I don't know. I think Jill came up with most of that. So, but the photo shoot was done behind the New Alliance building
right.
with that fence.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And you were dressed as a cop.
Absolutely. The cheap cop.
Well, we were going for the... You know, a lot of people might not remember the Roger Corman Caged Heat film, but we were going for that whole, like, kind of right. dark, you know...
Absolutely.
And it worked.
Yeah,
it worked really well.
And it was your photographs.
Yeah, I did take all the photos. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
What happened after that for you?
So after that,
Eels ended up... was still happening because you put that EP out in 2000, which
so I was playing with them for a little bit. Then I was playing with a band that I like to call my candy ass band, and it was Red Delicious. That lasted about a year.
Wow, I forgot about that. Red Delicious.
Yeah.
Who was in that band?
Nobody really.
Sorry, people out there that were in Red Delicious. I don't remember who was in the band either, but I do remember the band.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was really, really, really poppy. You know, I don't know. Wasn't really my thing. And then I'm sure I did a project with Carl Fien recently called Gull Boy, and. It was pretty good. We recorded an EP actually here at MFO with Joe Schmeiches and
Joel.
Yeah. And it came out really good, but unfortunately the it didn't click between us, so.
Well,
I'm jaded.
You know, Chris, before we wrap this up, I just want to say that, you know, despite what happened with Kate, it never affected our relationship.
Oh, that's
because
good.
Because every... What do you mean that's good? Did it ever seem like it did?
No.
Because I can remember, I was gone. You know, I moved out of state for a long time after that. But whenever I've seen you and we've got together, we've always had a good time.
Absolutely.
And I've been trying to get you to come on the show for a while, but it wasn't until I said we're doing it live on MFO that you finally said yes.
I have stage fright and I'm nervous. So please forgive me for not speaking as well as I could.
And you know, we're gonna go. You and I are gonna go where we always hang
Absolutely.
Out down to the third New Alliance
right.
building down in Somerville in Union Square when we leave here. But thank you so much, man, for doing this.
Oh, thank you, Steve. It means a lot to me.
It means a lot to me, man. Spore is a band that just blows me away whenever I listen to them. I'm like, wow.
We were really lucky.
Yeah, you guys were a great band. Not taken away from Caged Heat or Eels and everything else you've done. Red Delicious. Just kidding.
High Speed Vomit.
High Speed. You've had some great names.
Yeah.
You say Mule Boy? Was that the one that you...
Gull Boy.
Gull Boy.
Yeah. He got mad at me because I wanted to make t-shirts that said, "Who the hell is Gull Boy?"
Well, thanks, Chris and Mike. Before I give the final goodbye here, I just want to say stick around because we're going to play here on MFO and also after the podcast, Raised in Hell, Caged Heat with David Minahan. You know, you can reach me anytime at twistedrico@gmail.com. We have Facebook threads, Instagram, YouTube, and a TikTok page at Twisted Rico. Please support this podcast if you can, patreon.com/twistedrico. If you can't do that right now, just tell one person about it. That's, you know, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, UFO. Thanks, UFO. And thanks, MFO. Thank you, Phil Mogg, and thank you, Mike Newman. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive, raised in hell.
WMFO Medford, as we just heard. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Chris. That was a live edition of Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico and ended with Caged Heat with Dave Minahan and Raised in Hell. All right, a few more minutes before Sue Edelman is here with something about the women. I'm going to give you a new noise from a new album by Jesse Malin featuring his friends doing all of his songs. This one features Low Cut Connie, and it's awesome. It's called When You're Young at WMFO.
Sad luck story.